I see no objection. Let's proceed immediately on into the next case, which is Samuel Robinson and Cheryl Robinson versus Stephen and Renee Lego. Lake Road. Okay, looks like you're about ready. May I have each of the appearances, please, who's for the petition?
Yes, Your Honor, this is Mike Frazier on behalf of the offices.
All right, thank you, Mr. Frazier. And for the respondents, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Frank Tonger, and it's my luck to do a block from Double Groves.
Mr. Onger. This case is set for 30 minutes. That means that each side has 15 minutes. Counselor will need to keep track of your own time, please. And whenever you're ready to proceed, go ahead. Mr. Frazier.
Thank you all for letting me be here and speak on behalf of the Robinsons in this matter. As the court knows, this is a case really primarily of statutory construction of the working dog exemption of the dog bite statute. And we believe that a primary rule of the statutory construction is that it should be given its intended effect according to the plain meaning of the statute. And that's not accomplished when it's rendered essentially meaningless for a large portion of the people it's intended to regulate. And that's what's happened. That's what happened at the appellate court. Most of the people that operate predator control dogs and herding dogs rely extensively on the use of public lands to graze their animals, public and private. It was set forth in the amicus brief in some detail how significant that is, and they quantified it as well. Just some specific ones is the largest lamb and processing plants are found in Colorado and California. The livestock grazing is one of the largest use of federal public lands, which Colorado has a significant amount of, over 614 million acres in the country. And in the West, 80% of the sheep and lambs produced were from ranches that rely on public lands for grazing. And how do they do this? They do this with a federal grazing permit, which the appellate court determined wasn't significant enough ownership interest for the working dog exemption to apply. And by doing so, because that's how these people operate and have operated for centuries, for a century anyway. But my clients, multiple generations, have used the same permit. They've rendered that exemption meaningless, and we don't believe that was the intent of the legislature. It also is important to remember that the working dog exemption applies to working predator control dogs, which are the facts in this case. There's herding dogs too. Herding dogs for all the livestock and the cattle that are on the public lands. There's hunting dogs. People that have hunting dogs and hunt birds, and they get leases. They call them leases, but they're really probably a profit. They're an easement to be on the land and harvest game. All of those people will essentially, besides just trying to control dogs,
I'm sure you recognize this, and the strict liability the legislature introduced was well after a lot of this development on grazing and public lands and the rights of the grazer to maintain a herd or flock. Yes. On the public lands. And so it's aimed at recouping the personal injuries of a victim on a strict liability basis. So would you tell us how we're supposed to take that kind of specific situation and apply it where we have dogs that are apparently running loose in the midst of a major event for the public, entirely not under control your client and cause severe injury, and apparently had a repeated pattern. And so the other authorized use that was going on here, the biking or let's just say hiking or family recreating out there, how can it be that the legislature would have intended not to have a recompense from people bitten by animals that are owned by your client?
Well, I think I can answer that in two ways. I go, first of all, I believe that the legislature, when they wrote the statute in 2004, I think was well aware there were multiple uses of on the property. We have to assume they understood that both the people that had these grazing permits, which is significant a use of the land, if not more than people that ride mountain bikes in those properties, they understood that to be the case. And they wouldn't have written the property enough in the statute if they didn't want it to have some meaning. But the next to answer your question regarding why wouldn't they have a remedy, I believe that if you look at the way the statute is written, the remedy is the exemption isn't complete. The exemption is for strict liability for a serious dog bite or death under Section 2 of the dog bite statute. If, in fact, those things occur, not a normal dog bite that wasn't a serious one, they can pursue a claim under the CPLA or the negligence statute. So they have a remedy. I don't think we can argue that they have no remedy whatsoever. They just have to prove that the dog owner was negligent or had some knowledge that the dogs were dangerous, like they have had to do for the last 100 years.
If we adopt your interpretation, is the control issue an issue for the trial court to determine as a legal matter, or is it a fact issue for a jury?
If we adopt my interpretation, meaning control of the dog,
right,
it's a determination for the jury, I believe.
So does that in part answer Justice Hobson's question?
It could if it occurred on, if we take control of the land, control of the dog, it does. It would deal with the issue of their control, but if it occurred on the land with the permit holder, then in fact, if the control of the, if we just deal with the land, no, it wouldn't entirely. The control would deal with it was off their land. It would be a question of fact when the dog is off their land when the bite occurred. If it occurred within the boundaries of the permit, then the exemption would apply.
I didn't understand what you said a little bit earlier to tell you the truth about how they would have a remedy under simple negligence. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there's two ways.
I thought you filed a motion to dismiss that, which was granted and said that the sole remedy was under the premises liability, and that said that because of the exception under premises liability, they didn't have a remedy. Am I misunderstanding this case?
No, Your Honor. I wasn't clear. If it occurred on the owner, the dog owner's land, it would be a PLA case, a premises liability case. If it occurred outside the dog owner's land, for example, we're moving our livestock, or I'm hunting on someone else's land, it would be a negligence case. Okay. And then the damages part of the strict liability statute could also apply concurrently with it.
But here you're taking the position that it occurred on the land because this road where they were having the bike race was on the land. So unless they have a remedy under the premises liability act, they don't have a remedy in this case. Is that your position?
I think they could have a liability if they show, they would have to be. I'd have to back up.
Please.
If the dog bite statute relates to serious bodily injury, gives you a strict liability remedy just for economic damages, where I read Section 2. The exemption says, You have no cause of action if the exemption applies for bodily injury, serious bodily injury, or death. The serious bodily injury or death part of the statute, Section 2, is a creature of that statute. It says you have strict liability just for economic damages. So what would happen is, if you're bit on my land,
and the exemption applies and then permit. You can't sue me for a garden variety dog bite. You also can't sue me for, which is just say bomb injury. You also can't sue me for strict liability under that statute. But if you determine that I was violating the Premises Liability Act, or if it was a negligence case, I was unreasonable, you could still have a remedy if it occurred on my land.
Okay, I guess I understand your position.
Okay. The statute, the CPLA, just like the district court said, as well, I think the second important aspect, is the district court determined, like I'm arguing today, not only does it render it meaningless essentially for all these people, but the PLA provides us guidance, specific guidance, for who should be determined an owner of the land for the purposes of the dog bite statute exemptions. Just like the Premises Liability Act, we have a legal right to manage our livestock, manage the foliage on it, they ate, manage our activities. Even the appellate court determined that we were a PLA landowner. That same exact rationale should apply in this case. We're a PLA landowner, we're a landowner for the purposes of the dog bite statute.
Well, this is, there's 14 million acres of forest. There's 8 million acres of Bureau of Land Management land. Grazing can occur on all of those, 20 plus million acres. You're basically saying that the people that hold those grazing permits don't have to have control of their animals in regard to other uses, including recreational uses made of those lands. I mean, you're trying to use the Premises Liability Act when the federal government is actually the landowner, not a local farm or ranch, or arguably, of course, we're going to hear this joint, I hope, soon, that the legislature may have intended on your farm or ranch. There's a different thing. But you get out there where you can have recreational uses of the public, love this public land. The idea that dangerous dogs can roam and bite people who are engaging in events, is that within the contemplation of the legislature intended by this legislative scheme?
I think they said that if you have a grazing permit, they could have meant nothing else for it to apply to these people because that's who they are. It's a public policy argument to argue we don't like that they have some exemption from the dog bite statute. We wish there was a different remedy because this creates conflict. But that's what the legislature said. To read it any other way renders that whole section meaningless. It's the property of those people. And the appellate court determined that if I have...
The permit is their permit. Their permit to graze the animals, certainly, they don't own the land.
They agree with that.
The federal government owns the land.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's a possessory interest. It's a possessory interest with it's a property. They have the right to be there, use the land, exclude others who are doing the same type of things that not other people from the property, and they have a right to harvest it. And that's a real property interest. And it's primarily the property interest they actually have. And the court may disagree, and others may disagree with whether or not that creates a problem and whether or not the statute should be written. But the legislature could have intended nothing else unless we render that section of the statute meaningless. And I think that's the problem with spaces all along, is people have had concerns and said, this is a strict statute, it provides an exemption, we need to start parsing the language out in a way that will allow us to essentially render this meaningless.
Counsel, can I sort of tie a couple of different strands of argument together? As I understand your reading of the statute, you agreed to say the exemption applies if the dog is working on the property of the dog owner,
yes,
or working under the control of the dog owner.
Yes, sir.
And what you've just been arguing now is that the grazing permit itself creates sufficient ownership interest to allow you to fall within the owner exemption.
That's right.
But I'd like to ask you about your ultimate view around the control. And this ties back to Justice Hood's question. How are we to then interpret control? You suggested that when you're talking about a grazing permit, control exists so long as the dog is operating within the boundaries of the grazing permit. But I'm wondering if that Am I correct in your understanding of how control operates?
Well, control would operate for the dog when it was off the property. I mean, these dogs aren't always operating in their grazing permit. It's for hunting dogs and cattle dogs.
That's the reason I asked the question, is even if we agree with you, as suggested by Justice Hood, how do we then go about, or how does the trial court go about understanding how you assess control? What does control mean? What does control mean for a hunting dog? What does control mean for a predator-controlled dog?
Absolutely. The scenario would be I'm moving my cattle off of my grazing permit or off my leased land. I'm hunting on someone else's property that I don't have a lease. I just knocked on the door and asked if I could hunt birds there. So I did that. My dog bites under those circumstances. The jury would have to determine if they're under control. These are special types of dogs. They operate on fine. Hand signal, voice signal. They're trained to be around the sheep, or they're supposed to be within the sheep herd. The jury could determine if they're exercising control of the dogs or was just running loose.
Okay, so in this case, there was no jury determination, at least under that prong.
That's correct.
And if we were to disagree with you that there was sufficient ownership interest, what happens in this case? Does it need to go back for a jury determination about whether these dogs were under control of the owner?
I believe so. It's a question of fact that hasn't been resolved.
That's
my point. Would be, we have to go back and apply the dog bite statute. If there was other evidence as well about whether or not we had more control over the land than was set forth just in the facts the court decided on, I guess that could be considered too.
Okay.
I have 40 seconds. I don't know if it's worth holding. If I could, I will. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court. Again, my name is Trent Onger. I represent the plaintiffs in this case, Renee and Stephen LeGros. Allowing the working dog exemption to completely bar the LeGros' claims would give the Robinson's dogs the ability to attack and kill with impunity throughout Colorado. As Justice Hobbs said, we're talking about millions of acres of land. They could bite somebody one day, be totally exempt from that attack, and move on and bite somebody the next day. That's the reason why the legislature put in there the property of or under control of the dog's owners.
By exempt from the attack, you mean exempt from strict liability for the attack?
Exempt from strict liability. Mr. Frazier, I think, changed his position a little bit here this morning. I understood the defendant's brief to say that if the dog exemption bars plaintiff's claims, and there are no civil remedies available to the plaintiffs at all. It appears now that the plaintiffs would be able to proceed under the Premises Liability Act, which is what the Court of Appeals held, and this court has not granted cert on any Premises Liability Act claims. But the strict liability statute specifically says that a dog owner is strictly liable for an attack causing serious bodily injury. There is no dispute here. Ms. LeGros was mauled. She was at Camp Hale that day to participate in a bike race sponsored by the Bill Recreation District. The Robinsons were there too. They saw the activity. They testified in the criminal case that there was massive amounts of people there, hundreds of people, dogs. Eladio Inga, who is their sheep herder, testified in his deposition he'd seen the dogs chase bicyclists, chase cars and other people out on the land. In fact, 5 days before this attack, these dogs attacked another biker by the name Nicole Miller. The only thing that separates that attack from this one is that Ms. Miller stayed on the bicycle, whereas Ms. LeGros was pulled off and mauled by the dogs. Defendants knew of all of this. They had millions of acres of land on which they could have moved their herd to protect the public. Instead, they came that morning, they saw what was happening at Camp Hale, and then retreated to their home 100 miles away.
Do all of those arguments go to a breach of a duty then, rather than whether the statute requires strict liability?
No, I'm just simply pointing out how this could have been avoided had the Robinsons taken the action, because Mr. Frazier is saying that this exemption, and it not applying this exemption, would render it meaningless, and that's not the case. And they also stated in their brief that these are very rare attacks. That's not the case. It happened twice in the same week. The central question for the court is, did the Robinson's owner control the property where the attacks occurred? I'm unclear whether or not the defense are arguing that they controlled their dogs. It's certainly a question. They did not control their dogs that day. They had given instructions to their sheep herder to tie the dogs up because of the attack that had happened on Nicole Miller. However, something went wrong with that. The sheep herder untied the dogs while the race was still going on, while Ms. LeGros was still on the course, and that's how she got mauled. At the time of the attack, Mr. Engel was over a mile away across the river on the other side of the herd. There was nobody around these dogs. In fact, he didn't even know that the attack had happened until the next morning when Animal Control went that night with a gentleman by the name of William Parkhouse to retrieve the dogs. They were unable to do so because the dogs, blood covering their muzzles, were attacking the Animal Control van. And they couldn't get close enough, so they had to go back out the next morning. And that's when the Robinson sheep herder first found out about the attack. There was no question the defense did not control the dogs. As for control of the land, they can't possibly control land that a bike race is happening on. That no other guides are sending out recreationists. The campers are at, the bicyclists are at, the hikers, other animals are at. Nobody controls this property except for the Forest Service, who permitted people to be there. And the permit that the Robinsons have doesn't say that they can have dogs.
Well, step us through the exemption as you would have us construe it, would you please?
Excuse me?
Would you step through the liability and the exemption as you would have, lead us through it?
Sure. The exemption says that working dogs are exempt only if the dog owner owns the property or is in control of the property. Okay? There can be no question they did not own the property, the Forest Service did. Mr. Frazier makes some arguments in his brief that this is an easement. That can't be the case either. Certain requirements apply for an easement. One is that it can't be interfered with by anybody else. So there was a bike race going right in the middle of the land where this happened, right in the middle of the sheep grazing. So obviously, it could not be an easement. Now, as far as control of the property is concerned, now, again, if there was other activity happening there, the Robinsons had a permit that just allowed them to be there. It was a use permit. The Tailored Grazing Act specifically states that it does not convey any interest in the land. All right, the Robinsons are only able to be there pursuant to an interest in grazing, not in any possession.
A permit?
Yes.
A license?
Yes.
To use the land in another?
Yes.
Okay, so would you relate that up here to the statute when it talks about property? But certainly the permit is property, is it not a type of property?
The permit, it's not a type of property. The permit is just an allowance to use the land for grazing for both the benefit of the state and for the benefit of the Robinson sheep herding operation. It's not a property interest. The Robinsons don't have any right to exclude anybody. The permit talks about the ability to rotate the sheep, to maintain the pasture, to set up fences and things like that. There are no fences in Campdale or anywhere near where this attack occurred that the Robinsons had any control of. They couldn't keep anybody from being there. The Robinsons saw the bike race happening that day. They should have known that there was a problem when two of their dogs was attacked a bike rider only 5 days earlier. They didn't make any efforts to try to stop the bikers because they couldn't. They could not control the use of the land by their people.
Mr. Unger, can I follow up on that, please? Good morning. How does one control property? I mean, doesn't control denote the implication that something has an exercise of will?
Absolutely. I think this court doesn't have to disagree with the court. Doesn't have to agree with the Court of Appeals decision that control means the right to exclude. I think that's a perfect definition for it, though. The generally accepted use of the word control by Black's Dictionary and Merriam-Webster's is the ability to direct, to manage, to exclude others from the property. For example, if you were, a leaseholder in an apartment complex, you can control who comes in and out of your apartment building, just as the building owner can control who comes in and out. The Robinsons were mere permit holders. The permit granted them absolutely no right to control the Forest Service road where the attack occurred, or any part of Camp Hale, or any part of their millions of acres that were under that permit.
Can I ask you a question about the motion for summary judgment in the trial court and the way it ruled on it? What was the argument there? I didn't go back and look. Was it strictly a question of construing the statute? Was it strictly a question of whether owned the property included somebody who has a license or a possessory interest, or did it involve the question of control at all?
One of the things that we argued at the Court of Appeals was that the district court went well beyond the relief requested for the bed defense in this case. They filed a motion for summary judgment simply stating that the plaintiff's claim should have been brought pursuant to the Premises Liability Act and not pursuant to the negligence claims that we had filed. The district court then took that a step further, and there was no argument concerning this exemption at all. The district court then took it a step further and said there's no PLA claims that were pled, so it's going to be dismissed as the negligence claims. It should have been a PLA case, and also now for the first time thought that exemption applies less than 10 days before trial, and the entire case is tossed out.
And did the court articulate further why it thought the dog bite exemption apply?
The court spoke to some of the things that Mr. Frazier said, that the exemption would be rendered meaningless for a large majority of the sheep ranchers in the state, but they're not afforded the protections of it. I think the legislature took note of that, though, and that's why they said property of, and Mr. Frazier argues that you can't possibly own all of this land, although the Forest Service does, or property under the control of the dog owner. There could have been measures, maybe if the Robinsons could have taken the control of the property. Certainly not at Camp Hale. They don't control any of the land at Camp Hale, but perhaps another section of their permit is.
And maybe I'm missing a little bit here, but it seems to me the issue for us, given what the Court of Appeals did, is with regard to construction of the statute or interpretation of it, does it involve control of the property at all? Or are there two requirements here? One, owning the property and what all that would entail, including a possessor interest or whatever. And secondly, controlling the dog. And is controlling the dog only involved here to the extent that being on your own property would amount to controlling the dog? But the Court of Appeals seemed to read that language to mean not controlling the dog, but only controlling the dog, but controlling the property.
The exemption means property of or property under control of the dog owners. That's the way it was argued to the Court of Appeals. Mr. Frazier switched it to the dogs when we were in front of the Court of Appeals on oral argument. They dismissed it, footnote, saying that it would be illogical to apply the exemption if a dog owner simply controls the dog. To take kind of an extreme example, a dog owner is controlling his dog if he's ordering it to do something, commanding it to do something. So if you were controlling your dog and you commanded it to attack, under that reading of the statute, the dog owner would be exempt under the strict liability dog bite statute. We also had an affidavit from Representative Stanford, who's the original author of the bill, who's quite frankly and clearly stated this exemption only applies to property under the control or owned by.
Was that an affidavit that came in after the legislative enactment went through the legislature?
It did, Your Honor.
We've said that in plenty of cases, that is totally inadmissible because they former legislator can't talk about her or his legislative intent, much less the legislature as a whole.
And I completely understand that, Your Honor, and I understand what this court's jurisprudence has been on that issue. If you look to the legislative debates that were cited in our brief, when the legislature was debating the dog bite statute and then the exemptions, they were focused on the land and the property. And one of the legislators said, hey, I'm concerned about my constituents who are out there with herding dogs, and ranchers, and people being on their property. And I want exemption for them. Somebody goes like a trespasser onto their property. Another example that was given is a junkyard dog. Again, somebody that comes into somebody else's property or a property that's controlled by somebody else through a fence or by other means, maybe a beware of dog sign, no trespassing, that sort of thing. That would at least demonstrate some form of control, the right to exclude, as the Court of Appeals said. And so that's why, I know Representative Stanford's affidavit is inadmissible, but when you actually look at what the court was considering, the legislature was considering when it enacted these exemptions, they never talked about at all control of the dogs. That was never brought up in the legislative debates. Sorry. And defendants have never disputed that they don't own the property where it happened. If you look at the plain language of the statute, property of means belonging to, and the definition of property states three separate times it's the exclusive right to exclude another. That's property of, that's ownership. Again, the Taylor Grazing Act says it shall not create any right, title, interest, or estate in the lands. That's the specific act under which this permit was granted. It specifically tells defendants you have no possession or possessory interest or right or title in the land. To claim that it's an easement, if they wanted to see an easement, they would have put it in the language of the permit. It's simply.
However, we've held that the possessory interest is taxable.
Yes.
By counties, right?
Yes, and the Robinsons pay taxes of $10 for the millions of acres that they own. Mr. Frazier has stated that the amount of taxes that you pay doesn't necessarily reflect your right to property ownership, and I beg to disagree because I think their taxes would be a hundredfold that if they actually owned 100 million acres.
So it's a tax on the use of the public
land.
It's a
tax on the use of the
public. But that is privately held, and therefore is a possessory interest that's taxable.
Yes.
So
it's a permit. They're allowed to possess, though. They're allowed to be on the land. They're allowed to be there with their sheep. We're not disputing that the defendants had every right to be in Camp Hale on that day. They shouldn't have been there on that day. They should have gotten the sheep and the dogs out of there, particularly after they heard of the attack on Nicole Miller. The experts in this case have opined that these dogs do best in remote areas, away from distractions. They treat a human being in the same way as a bear. Both are a threat to the sheep, and these dogs demonstrated that. Mr. Frager spoke about exemptions that apply to other types of dogs, like herding dogs and hunting dogs. There's no other dog, except a pair control dog, that is trained to attack any perceived threat to the sheep. In this case, it was Renee DeGrow. 5 days before that, it was Nicole Miller.
It sounds to me like the dogs weren't even close to the sheep in this particular case.
The sheep herd spans, as I understand it, hundreds of sheep across several miles. A lot of people testified that he was over a mile away and was still with the sheep. But directly answer your question, Mr. Chief Justice, that's an even bigger problem if the dogs were running free and out of the defendant's control and there were no sheep around at all. Ms. LeGros saw two sheep as she was coming down the hill, though, immediately before the attacker occurred. And what we'd ask the court to do, Your Honors, is to affirm the holding of the Court of Appeals to allow the plaintiffs to go back to the district court to assert the premises liability plan pursuant to the Court of Appeals order, which is not up here for review, and also to proceed under civil law by statute claims, with the exception declared not to apply in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Frazier.
Very limited time I have, I'd like to speak quickly about the issue of control. Control of the property under the Premises Liability Act means control of the operations and create some sort of danger or dangerous activity. That should be the same for the dog bite statute. They have control over the ranching operations and should be read the same way. The idea of excluding others or the right to exclude others appears nowhere in the statute, appears nowhere in the dictionary, but folks cite, and it creates a distinction or a difference without distinction. If you have a possessor interest to do all this and control all others and exclude all others, you actually just own the property. So there's really no difference there. And my time is up. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, counsel. We appreciate your arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and we'll take a 15-minute recess. We'll return then around 11:45 to 10:45. Thank you.